Okay, I think I'm wired up, as they say. Thank you, Andrew. I am pleased to be back at the RHSV. I haven't been here for not often in the last year or so, but it's good to be back. So I'm going to talk about reviewing the legacy of bush nursing in Victoria. Now, it's come to be recognised, at least by the wise ones among us, that any robust and resilient nation, a community which is stable and prospers, has strong foundational pillars. The primary one is an equitable legal system to which government, institutions, and citizens alike are obliged to conform and fully consent to do so. Of equal importance are universal education for the community and universal health care. This paper highlights some core factors and qualities that underpin one of those pillars, the delivery of community health services, especially or specifically in non-metropolitan districts. And it's a case study drawn from my history, the first 75 years of the Victorian Bush Nursing Association, which was published in 1987. Now, when I was speaking to the Medical History Conference early this year, I called the talk Levels of Life Saving, in recognition of the rising levels of achievement or success in medical treatment that happened over those 75 years of the 20th century between 1910 and 1995. Now, I've got no visuals for you. I think they're too distracting to your concentration, as well as time consuming in a talk, not to mention being prone to technical blips and breaks. And I noticed when Kate rang me this afternoon to see whether I was going to bring along a PowerPoint presentation, I said no, and she said, thank goodness. So, however, at the start, though I've got no visuals, it might be helpful if you'd all assemble in your mind a map for what will be a quick trip around and across the state of Victoria, particularly as it was in those first three quarters of the 20th century. Now, you can close your eyes if you want to do this. No one will know if it brings on a snooze, particularly this late in the day, unless, of course, you flop sideways or jolt yourself awake. However, as in many things, the proper starting point for this talk is a person with an idea, or indeed several persons and ideas. The Victorian Bush Nursing Association, VBNA, took strong root from 1910, arising from an idea, a concept, brought to Australia by Rachel Lady Dudley, wife of Australia's fourth Governor General, who was appointed in March 1908. An intelligent, forceful woman, renowned for her cool beauty, Rachel had married the second Earl of Dudley in 1891 and produced seven children, including a set of twins. Although their relationship was obviously under strain during their Australian sojourn and ended in formal separation in 1912, a couple of years after they'd returned to England. Now, Lady Dudley had been a supporter of district nursing schemes that were established in London and other British cities to assist the poorer or less well-off classes in their homes. And she instigated such a scheme in Northern Ireland while her husband was posted there. However, her project for an Australia-wide scheme proposed in 1909 fail to get sufficient support from the wider community, either financially or organisationally. For instance, state governors, who under the association's proposed constitution would head each state council, they considered that such a role would conflict with their constitutional position as head of government in their various states. There were grumbles too from charity administrators like George Fairbairn, who was then chairman of the Alfred Hospital Board. And this was a time, of course, when hospitals had not yet fully moved from their founding status as charities, with financial subscribers and board members having the right to recommend patients for admission. Anyway, Fairbairn wrote to the Argus in 1909, pointing out that with every governor's wife, as he put it, seeking to signalise their sojourn in the country with a new venture, established charities like Alfred Hospital were bound to lose out. Nevertheless, at the last meeting of the Bush Nursing Provisional Committee in December 1909, Lady Dudley expressed her hope that individual states might take up the idea. Victoria needed no further urging. While in after years a Tasmanian scheme and a more limited one in New South Wales also emerged, Victoria's was by far the largest and most comprehensive, actually benefiting in a sense from the state's high concentration of population in a relatively small geographical area, a benefit it had enjoyed, of course, since the gold rushes. Financially, the Victorian scheme was secured through member subscription, local fundraising, and some donations. Later support came from one or two charitable trusts, and ultimately there was a hard-won level of government subsidy. And now I must introduce another person with an idea. Indeed, over his long life, he was born in 1862 and died in 1945, he unleashed a plethora of ideas ranging from medical and hospital reform to professional education, orchestral music to town planning, even for a time in the 1920s promoting an Australian-Japanese friendship society. I speak, of course, of a man some of you may already have recognised, Dr. later Sir James William Barrett. I like the occupations that in the Australian Dictionary biography entry that was written by that wonderful word spinner Stephen Murray Smith. His occupations were described as ophthalmologist and publicist. And publicist, of course, is promoter of a cause, and many causes in Barrett's case. Murray Smith notes that, quote, by general agreement, his most important work was founding the Victorian Bush Nursing Movement, aided, of course, by his sister Edith, who has her own ADB entry, and which, quote, had a remarkable effect on rural health. VBNA centres began with a single resident nurse, with 67 of those centres, or 40% of them, afterwards converting to hospitals. The hospitals had a minimum of three staff, two nursing, one domestic. Centres stroke hospitals operated in regional communities across this densely populated state, and you can start your mind maps now. Places range from the more far-flung parts of Victoria to what are now suburbs of Greater Melbourne, but were once food processing, producing regions. I've got in mind such places as Berwick, Pakenham, Hastings and Mornington. Where is he? Up to Emerald, Cockatoo and Ferntree Gully in the Dandenongs, even Drysdale and Queenscliff on the Bellarine Peninsula, Healesville, Yarra Junction and Cowes on Phillip Island. The first centre to accommodate a nurse with living quarters and a consulting or treatment room, opened in 1912 at the timber harvesting and farm community of Beech Forest in the Otways. Lady Dudley was really pleased to be there at the formal opening on a typically drenching Otways day just before her return to England. Lavers Hill and Forest were also in the timbered Otways, while Apollo Bay and Lawn opened along the Great Ocean Road as it was extended, and much later a centre opened at Anglesey. Other farm and timber communities were in the Central Ranges at Trentham, in South Gippsland at Nearham and Nearham South, together with Mowey and Morwell in Brown Coal Territory, and another cluster in Gippsland area in country stretching down to the Wilson's Promontory. An unusual one was at Eildon Weir, while it was under construction between 1920 and 1928. East Gippsland also felt the need, with centres at Buchan, Dargo, Ensay, Swifts Creek, Can River, Hayfield, meets Timber Mill, was recently in the news, and later at Galantapy and Mallacoota. Older farm communities in the Wimmera established centres and or hospitals. The Horsham Centre, though it had a general hospital, a public hospital, it opened and operated between 1922 and 1932, supplying home nursing for a modest fee and providing infant welfare care until the state-sponsored welfare centre opened in 1929. Bort in the Wimmera made a speedy conversion from centre to hospital, while Hopetoun, Minyip and Dimboola all felt the need for a centre during and after the Second World War. A score of places in the newly settled Mallee established centres, with another score or more on the northern plains when irrigation and closer settlement came on stream in the 1920s, with yet another cluster in the Upper Murray district. A further spread at greater distances across the southwest pastoral plains stretched from Meredith and Lismore in the east to Charlton, Coleraine and Dartmoor in the west, the latter close to the South Australian border. Over the decades, VBNA established a network of 156 nursing centres and hospitals, all except nine before the Second World War, that is, during its first 30 years. A source of strength was an ongoing underlay of a wide range of volunteers in organisation from the founder onwards, in administration, even for nursing and hospital domestic duties in emergency situations. In 1995, the association was wound up by consent of its remaining members, who transferred their property assets either to the State Health Department, their local community, or in one or two cases to a private provider. This swift spread of the movement coincided with a growing complexity of shifts in medical science, technology, and practice during the 20th century that inevitably impacted on health services available in the bush. Those of you who are interested in medical history may not need a review of all those changes, but a little refresher may still be useful. From the movement's outset in 1910, there was already awareness of germ theory and the need for antisepsis in treating injury, in childbirth, and in the occasional minor surgery undertaken by nurses, which could include tooth extraction and, in timber country, wood splinters from the eyes and other delicate parts. The efficacy of some older medical remedies did persist, but simple anaesthetics and drugs administered by injection only gradually became more accessible, though vaccination, other than for smallpox, only became common in the 1930s. Hygiene, nutrition, and first aid, including for snake bite, were the areas covered when nurses visited local schools, if and when they were invited by the local school committee. And of course, the children most enjoyed splinting and bandaging each other. VBNA nurses were all hospital trained with experience in medical practice, and a midwifery certificate was essential. In its first decade, I was able to identify about 150 individual nurse recruits. Some of them were new immigrants, some were widows or wives without dependents who were known locally. Some nurses also married into the community, thereby boosting the permanent pool of country skill. Their recruitment, professional standards, pay and work conditions were organised and monitored through VBNA's central office, a crucial element in the association's successful expansion. Nurses worked in conjunction with a local committee and a doctor from the district whose personality and practices could range from genial, holistic and thoroughly up-to-date to peremptory, eccentric and way behind the times. Nurses had necessarily to be skilled in diplomacy and human relations as well as medical science. While the majority of doctors were men, there were some remarkable women, such as Gwyneth Wisewold at Trentham. You may know of her autobiography, Outpost, Doctor on the Divide. VBNA's levels of life-saving depended on a quite complex mix of many people's skills. Call-outs to homes for severe illness, for childbirth, and for emergency treatment at accident sites, whether on farms or among the timber, had to be juggled with patient visits to the centre. For much of the time, the nurses worked at what is now termed sole practitioners. For several decades, even up to 1939, horse riding ability was a requirement, despite motor cars becoming more common on main roads. The Walwa community on the Upper Murray long enjoyed the tale of their nurse, recruited soon after her arrival from England, who brought along her bicycle as proof of riding ability and was utterly flummoxed when introduced to her horse. The VBNA expanded rapidly during the interwar years in parallel with Victoria's population growth and spread of settlement, and notwithstanding the tough times of economic depression. The expansion in hospitals was marked. Outlined simply, 44 nursing centres and 3 hospitals had been established by 1923. By 1931, there were 43 centres and 25 hospitals. By 1945, there were fewer centres, but 64 hospitals. 36 of the 64, over half, were classified as small, with between 5 and 10 beds. 22 had between 11 and 18 beds, while 6 large ones had more than 18 beds. Hospitals extended the opportunity for a range of new medical resources, such as X-ray and modern theatre equipment, to be available for care of patients in situations of emergency trauma, acute medical surgery, midwifery, geriatric, and other special needs, as well as the education in public health to adults as well as children. The largest show hospitals in 1945 were at Euroa on the Hume Highway and Pakenham on the Princes Highway, the result in part of the rise in road accidents due to swelling motor traffic. That in turn was one of the prompts during the 1920s to initiate a country ambulance service. Using volunteer drivers with a community purchased vehicle, and in the country they were robust Dodgers rather than the Fords used by the Metropolitan Ambulance Service, The system was based on the same community association principles as the VBNA, and under the aegis of the same driving force, James Barrett. He jealously fostered and oversaw development of the ambulance scheme until it was absorbed into a statewide ambulance service in 1946-7, a year or so after Barrett's death. Group insurance schemes for hospital benefits were also strongly rooted in the VBNA principles of community cooperation and, quote, insurance against the inevitable. Such schemes, based on those which operated in the 19th century or by 19th century lodges such as Manchester Unity and Free Gardeners, were widespread in the 1930s, and they operated in close association with government-fostered development of what were termed intermediate hospitals or sections of hospitals, whereby people could be treated at lesser personal cost than in a private hospital, while having access to the higher standards of care and treatment that were available in the public training hospitals. As non-profit private hospitals, VBNA hospitals were participants in their own benefits scheme. Other small private hospitals, and some of you may remember this, which were often set up as an adjunct to a doctor's practice for childbirth and other protracted medical care, they consequently diminished in number from the 1940s. After the Second World War, there was a rapid increase in Australia's pace of life and scale of activity, whether it be in construction, and the classic Snowy scheme is again on the political horizon, in large-scale mechanisation, think bulldozers and air travel as two examples, and specialisation in the sciences, even splitting into subspecialties, not least across the ever-widening field of medicine. Some examples are major surgery on what were termed the great organs, the heart, the lungs, the kidneys, the antibiotic breakthrough, women's health treatments such as pregnancy management and the contraceptive pill, all revolutionary in their time. In the process, many assumptions about levels of life-saving and healthcare needs generally were turned on their head. In 1966, a government report pointed out as an achievement that Victoria's hospitals treated 99 inpatients for every 1,000 of the population, compared to 71 per thousand, only 71 per thousand in 1950. While the average length of stay reduced by one third, from 15.3 to 10.6 days. Now, of course, as we all know, average hospital stays are even shorter. You're barely in before you're out again. Another significant change was the Commonwealth Hospitals Benefits Scheme, which came into force on the 1st of January 1963. It increased the funding pool available to hospitals at all levels. Communities with bush nursing hospitals, particularly the large ones, then had to consider whether to apply for transfer to the public system. By 1983, there were 38 VBNI hospitals still operating, and over the next decade, up to 93, these were either absorbed into the public system, sometimes as annexes to base hospitals, or they were turned into disability or aged care units, or the buildings were sold to provide for other local health needs. I think the most valuable legacy of bush nursing was the recognition and implementation of real and ongoing what they termed personalised care. The patient's recovery depended as much on comfort and peace of mind in familiar surroundings where institutional systems did not intrude as on any clinical therapy. And I've got a friend who had a spell in the recently in the former Mornington Bush Nursing Hospital, which is now a private non-for-profit hospital, and she told me some wonderful stories about how the staff there would bend the rules just slightly for her own personal comfort. She's got special dietary needs, and one of the staff came up with her own special milk, and she said, "I'll leave it in the nurse's kitchen." And she said, "But I'm not allowed to go in there." She said, "Don't say anything. You can make your own cup of tea anytime you like." That's personalised care. For some people, the experience of bush nursing hospitals was literally lifelong. Being born and dying in that VBNA environment of personalised care. I find it interesting that in the midst of today's ever more complex world of healthcare, health needs, health funding, there's been a rediscovery of the psychological aspect of healing that comes through a patient's sensory world properly accommodated to individualised medical care. A second legacy, perhaps not so widely recognised just at present, is the great benefit that results when the management of health funding has strong local input, as in the Bush Nursing Scheme. Local communities were in a position to see the need, seek ways to fill it, source the funding, and most importantly, monitor the outcome. Then modify their action appropriately. So it's evident that there is enduring wisdom to be found in history if the will is there to seek it out. Thank you.